Hello, Eucharist and friends. It was great to be together again. We would love to have you join us again in person if that's something you're comfortable doing. We'll be meeting Sundays at 10:30 a.m. And if you are interested in connecting with our community but not feeling quite yet up to gathering with a group of people, there are a couple of options. We have a Zoom live stream running during that service, beginning again at 10:30 a.m. EST. And also, we are having times on Wednesday when you can stop by the building. It's all posted on our website. We've got common prayer in the morning. We've got a time of Christian meditation. We've got a community connection time, open sanctuary to come and sit and pray. Lots of ways to connect with one another during this time. And we are just trusting that as we each kind of take whatever the next step is, God's going to guide us where we are going. Also, apologies this week for the audio quality. Not the best. We are still learning how to make it work in this space now while we're also doing live streams. But hopefully the quality will steadily improve week over week. We are excited to be back together, excited to be walking through Lent together, and glad to have you join us in this way at this point in our gatherings. So we will hopefully see some of you soon. Grace and peace. Enjoy the sermon.
Good morning. I'm going to be reading from Luke chapter 13. I don't know if you guys have pew Bibles yet. It's not time yet. Still too COVID-y. Touch it and we get COVID. So I'll read from Luke 13, starting at verse 31. But it's an interesting passage, and it's one that requires a little bit of context. So just want to give you a little landscape of what the sort of political history of the time was before we dive in to this very ancient text. So in this passage, Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the epicenter of the Jewish religion at the time. So he's on his way there. He's walking toward there. And we know, for those of us who have read the story before, that it's when Jesus is in Jerusalem that he gets arrested, taken away by the religious and political authorities both, and he's crucified and he dies. If we know the story, we also know that he gets to resurrect 3 days later. And so all of that is sort of in the back of our minds as we look at this text. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. He's in Perea, which is a region of the Israelite territory just on the other side of the Jordan River. So he's almost there, but he's not quite there yet. Perea, as well as Galilee, was under the rule of Herod, who was one of the kind of kings of the Roman Empire. Other parts of Judea were also under Herod's rule, but it's almost like there was a middle man in other spaces. So in Jerusalem, for example, where Jesus is headed, there's someone named Pontius Pilate that would have been responsible for things like arresting and crucifying a criminal. So right now he's directly under Herod's rule. When he gets to Jerusalem, he's going to be under the rule of a middle man named Pontius Pilate, who becomes a very spicy character in the story later, but we're not there yet. That makes sense? Cool. Nice. Little history lesson. I actually needed to Google some of that earlier. I was like, I don't think that I really caught all that, but now I do, and so now I can pass it on to you. Luke 13, starting at verse 31. At that time, some Pharisees, I should say too, the Pharisees are some of the religious elite in Israel. At that time, some Pharisees came to Jesus and said to him, "Leave this place," that is Perea, "leave this place and go somewhere else. Herod wants to kill you." Jesus replies, "Go tell that fox. I will drive out demons and heal people today and tomorrow, and on the third day, I will reach my goal. In any case, I must keep going today and tomorrow and the next day, for surely no prophet can die outside Jerusalem. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem. You who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you, how often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. But you are not willing. Look, your house has left you desolate. I tell you, you will not see me again until you say, 'Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord.'" Amen. So the Pharisees are going up to Jesus in Perea, and they're saying, Herod wants to kill you. You should probably get out of there. And, you know, if I were Jesus and someone were to tell me, hey, you know, like the most powerful person in the land, they want your head, I would be terrified. That would be very terrifying news to receive. And so it's very interesting that Jesus doesn't respond being like, oh, crap, yeah, I'll get out of here. Geez, thanks for letting me know. Instead, he says, well, you go tell that fox. Like, he's not only is he not afraid of Herod, but it's almost like he's sort of poking fun at him. He's almost like, yeah, that fox, I'm not worried about that coming sly little guy. I'm not afraid. And why isn't Jesus afraid? Well, there are two reasons, and they're right in the text. First, verse 33, he says, in any case, I'm going to keep going on my way today and tomorrow and the next day. It's almost like he's saying to the Pharisees, like, I know, I'm getting out of here. Like, I'm on a journey and I'm going to finish it. I'm on my way today, tomorrow, and the next day. So just shh, calm down. But the other reason on the other side of verse 33, he says, yeah, surely no prophet's going to die outside Jerusalem, eh? And there, just like calling Herod fox, it's almost like he's calling out the religious leaders as well, saying like, I mean, you guys know that like, I'm going to go die in Jerusalem. Like, you're the religious elite. You know that those people want my head too. And so, yeah, I'm headed that direction and I'm going to die there. The Pharisees know the profound irony that's kind of this tension all throughout the Jewish history, that a lot of the prophets that later receive glory are killed by the religious elite at the time. They're not accepted in their own country at the time. And so he's sort of poking fun. He's saying like, yeah, the state might kill me, but more likely it's going to be you. What Jesus is basically saying is that there's nowhere safe for him to go. Both the religious leaders and the state want his life at this point. On his right and on his left, there's a lot of reason for anxiety. And that kind of seems familiar, doesn't it? There's a lot of reason for anxiety. Maybe we're looking at our right and at our left and being like, oh gosh, like there's a lot of threat. Maybe we're scrolling down the news and going like, oh gosh, my heart's beating a little faster than it was. Maybe we're even looking at the church, you know, the same way Jesus looked at his religious powers, and we're going like, oh gosh, I wanted that to be a safe place too, but it doesn't always feel that way. Heck, where do we go? Jesus exemplifies for us in this passage what I think is a sort of healthy approach to looking anxiety in the face. Looking at verse 34, he's just finished going like, yeah, like the state wants my life, Jerusalem wants my life. And he just, it's almost like I picture him getting on his knees. And there are other gospel passages in the other scriptures that quote this moment in Jesus's ministry and life as well and communicate that he's weeping at this point. He says, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you. Jesus is weeping. Jesus is lamenting. You know, I have this vivid memory that was coming to mind as I was looking at this passage of very early on in the pandemic. It was like March or April 2020, and it was that time when, like, I don't know if you were like me, but I was literally, like, refreshing my newsfeed every hour because every hour there was something new that felt very poignant. and I had, again, like, the heart is racing, but I just can't stop checking the news. And I found an article about New York City in those very early days. I don't know if you guys remember, it was just like, oh gosh, it was so tragic. Just like bodies just like getting shipped off, and there wasn't enough space for them all, and there wasn't enough, we didn't know what to do with all the death. Oh gosh, it was so terrible. And I've been to New York City like once, like 15 years ago, and I hardly remember it, but I just remember weeping for New York City. It's like, I don't even know these people, but I just like, I remember I was on my kitchen floor and I just like fell down and I was like, I can't believe this is happening, and I just like actually wept. And I think it was one of those times where it was just like this release of all the anxiety and the grief that we were experiencing in those early days. And that honestly, we're still experiencing now, aren't we? I think Jesus is exemplifying that that's a good start. Just sitting with the grief and letting it run through our bodies and not ignoring it. The same way Jesus wept over Jerusalem, perhaps we can be weeping over Ukraine, even if, like me with New York City, I don't know these people, we can weep with them. We can weep over things that are even closer to us, things in our own city that we see that aren't the way they should be. We can start by weeping. We can weep over churches that break our trust. We can weep over our own sort of religious communities that we wish would be more than they are. We can weep at whatever present life circumstances we're bringing here this week. We can start by leaning into the pain. Maybe that's even something you want to take some time to do this week. Noticing the emotions running through our bodies and just letting them run through. But there's something else that Jesus does after his lament. The other half of verse 34, he says, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those who sent you. He says, how often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you are not willing. The second thing Jesus does is he gathers. He loves the community. I was thinking about this passage a lot this week, and I was thinking about mother hens, and I was like, I know, I've never had a relationship with a mother hen. Like, I've never had chickens. I'm kind of a city girl, and I was thinking to myself, I would love to know a little bit more about their behavior in order to be able to communicate what Jesus is exactly saying here, because people in Jesus' day would hear the way that he speaks and teaches and all the sort of agrarian language, and they would know exactly what he's talking about. Me, I have no idea. And so I asked some friends who have chickens, and none of them had mother hens. I guess the sort of industrial agriculture method these days is that the eggs get taken immediately from the mother chickens and they never actually develop that maternal instinct, which is a very interesting fact. I found that very interesting. My mom grew up on a chicken farm, and so I asked her, and she was like, I don't actually know much about like the rearing of chicks. So anyway, that's just an interesting fact for you. But I ended up Googling it, and I learned two things about mother hens. The first thing I learned, I was like, I wonder what that, like, gathering under the wings thing is. And I was looking at videos of mother hens and their chicks. And when the chicks are really, really young, not only does the mother hen, like, gather the chicks under her wings, but the chicks actually, like, make their way under, like, all of her. Like, they're, like, I was watching videos of chicks just literally going into their mother hen and just, like, getting swallowed up by her fluff under her. And she literally sleeps on the mother hen sleeps on the chicks all night long. Isn't that interesting? So I was picturing that, and I was picturing just this, like, really wholesome coverage that I'm sure that the people of Jesus' day would think of when they think of a mother hen. Just this complete wrapping around, this complete warmth and safety to the point where you're almost invisible. The other thing I learned is that mother hens are incredibly territorial. It's actually stunning, quite something to watch them. So again, I'm on Google, I'm researching. And it was really fun, sermon prep, just like YouTubing, like mother hens. And I watched this video of I kid you not, and then I learned from my mom's cousin, who I also saw this week, that this is true, okay? So there was a cow going up to a mother hen and her chicks, and the mother hen literally got so big, like, she almost looked like a peacock, and obviously the cow is like still 10 times her size, but she starts chasing him, which is nuts. Like, that was happening in nature. The cow is running away from the tiny mother hen. I was like, that is nuts. And the chicks are like going crazy behind her, but that's different. She's very territorial to the point where she can be very aggressive when someone is threatening her chick. And I was just like, that is a very unafraid hen. He's a very unafraid hen, not afraid of the violence, the potential for pain and suffering that comes when you're protecting your little ones. And you know what? That made me think of mothers in general. That made me think about like human mothers. And I've never been a mother, but I'm getting to the age where people my age are mothers, and friends of mine are mothers. And I'm thinking about how right from the beginning, being a mother means needing to be unafraid of pain and suffering. Right from the beginning, they're dealing with pain in their own bodies as they're pregnant and giving birth. Pretty painful from what I hear. And then you have a child attached to you for like many, many months or years, and you're breastfeeding and you're giving and you're giving and you're giving, and then they become a toddler and then they have tantrums, and then you try to gather them up, but they punch you in the face. And it's a lot of pain and suffering. And why do mothers even do it? Well, they do it for love. And Jesus, like all good mothers, in this story is looking the pain, looking the threats, looking all there is to very truly be afraid of in the eye, and he's moving forward in his journey today, tomorrow, and the next day for love. Just like mother hens, just like human mothers, bearing and rearing children for love. Jesus is saying, yes, the state wants my life. Yes, the religious leaders want my life. But I will carry on today, tomorrow, and the next day on this journey to violent death, because I long so deeply to gather up my chicks like a mother hen gathers chicks under her wings. I am doing it for love, and that's what leaves me unafraid. I think Jesus is evidencing what the Apostle Paul says much later on, where he says, perfect love casts out fear. And I mean, I'm sure Jesus was afraid, but it's almost like he's saying that is so secondary to the love I feel. It is so secondary to the love I have for these chicks, for Jerusalem, for the people that are under my care. He's displaying really the character of the God who is storied throughout Scripture, the God who transcends and upholds all things, including us now. He's a God of love. Love that is as sacrificial as a mother. Love that casts out all fear, including fear of the powers that be. Jesus carrying on, and as he's going, he's gathering up all who are willing under his wings. He's saying, let's go together. Let's go together to die. Let's go together to experience the sacrificial love that we have for communities. Let's lament all the way down into death so that we can come up into joy. Let's go together into the dark places so that we can resurrect together as well. And he's asking, are you willing? Are you willing to be a chick under the mother hen's wings? I invite you to take some time this week to ask yourself that question and to maybe ask Christ in you, can you show me how to be willing to be gathered under your wings? And then humbly wait and watch for it. Perhaps Christ's wings this week will come to you through the sacrificial love of a friend, a community member, a family member, or maybe a mom. They're good at that. Perhaps it will come as you sit in silent prayer, you know. There are saints throughout history that have experienced the profound kind of coverage, the profound safe and warm place in places of prayer. Sometimes just sitting for 5 minutes can be enough for us to notice that we're under Christ's wings. Perhaps you'll experience or hear of a story of sacrificial love, and you'll be able to point to that and be like, ah, there it is. There's that love that casts out fear. It does exist. It is out in this world. Whatever it may be, I pray for all of us that there'll be moments this week when we'll notice some soft, warm feathers ruffling over our heads as we walk through these very threatening days. And we'll be able to say, yes, there is something bigger than myself, something that transcends me and holds me as close as a mother and loves me all the way to death. And let us enjoy being in the shelter of those wings. Amen. Is this working? Oh, great. We're going to sing together. And as we're singing, you're welcome to go to the back corner there where there's some cards and you can write out prayers that we'll pray together as a community after this song is finished.